Welcome to the Brooklyn Boxing Podcast. I'm Pat Healy, and I'm joined with Dino Spencer, co-owner of the famous Fifth Street Gym in South Beach. How's it going?
Very good. Thank you very much.
Appreciate you coming on and, you know, excited to talk some boxing with you. I know you got a lot of fighters in the gym now. And then obviously we got to talk about some of the history of the gym. Congrats on 10-year anniversary, right? The other day of the gym reopening.
Yes, we actually, we got our license to open the gym on September the 10th. And we had a grand opening party with Muhammad Ali, Angelo Dundee, and there was countless world champions in the gym. And they didn't come to see me. They came to see Muhammad and Angelo. But it was the most exciting night maybe in my life. It was unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, I was just reading a little bit about the backstory of the reopening. And, you know, you guys had to change locations, correct?
We've had to change a few times, actually. The rent in South Beach is ridiculous. The space is so limited in South Beach. We could be in Miami, but it wouldn't be the same. It wouldn't be, you know, so now we're on Fifth Street, just a few blocks away from the original gym.
That's awesome. Yeah, I mean, it must have been like such a range of emotions to reopen it. And now it's already been 10 years. I'm sure those have gone by fast, right? I mean,
yeah, it's unbelievable. It's been fast and difficult. It's hard. I try to find this blend of regular people and pro fighters because I really feel that successful regular people, and when I say regular, I mean not professional fighters, not fighters of any kind, their life experience, their education, all the things that they have a lot to offer, especially if they're not in the fight game. They have a lot to offer fighters where their regular managers, the regular guys that are in boxing, you know, they're not very genuine. They've been burned out themselves. They've been burned by so many boxers that they do everything they can to make a living in boxing without getting burned by another boxer. And they wind up being very jaded and burning a lot of boxers. So I've created this system here where my clients who paid like $175 or $200 for private lessons are working out next to the professional fighters. And they've developed some kind of connection. And many times, my clients wind up sponsoring the fighters and they don't want anything for it. They're successful on their own. They're not trying to feed their family by getting a few dollars off a boxer. So they're very genuine in their help. They're very genuine in their financial support and in their mentoring to try to make sure that if these guys do make a few dollars, they're not going to blow it all, to make sure they can buy themselves a house and make sure they get their taxes paid. You know, opposed to, there's so many guys out there, you've heard the stories, where the managers make sure they get all of their money and then some. And by the time the fighter buys himself a new, you know, sports car and a gold watch, he's got nothing left and the IRS is knocking on his door. So it has worked out really well, but it's been very challenging because a lot of people that want to pay $200 a session don't want to work out in an old fashioned boxing gym. So I found some particular people that are, you know, are very passionate and hardcore people, but their passion and success has come through being an accountant or being a doctor or a surgeon or a lawyer, or an actor, or a model. And they don't want to go to the local health club that is very sanitary. They want to come and really, you know, really get serious. And it allows both of them to excel. So far, so good.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's a pretty, most people probably don't realize like how fighters are, you know, independent contractors, and you know, when they get that check, the taxes aren't already allotted for. So it's like they think, oh, I got the check, gonna buy some, you know, new watch, new whatever. And then at the end of the year when they gotta pay taxes, they run into trouble. I know there's been some interviews of some MMA guys actually more recently that have kind of touched on that. But that's awesome that you're doing that. I mean, it's you know, these fighters need it. It's not like they have you know, a pro league per se behind them that can kind of help support with that. And it's a wild.
There's no fighters union, and I don't think there ever will be. So in the meantime, you people that have some semblance of a heart have to look out for these guys.
Yeah, 100%. And you know, as you mentioned, now the gym has people from all different backgrounds, not just pro fighters, but obviously, you know, the origin story of Fifth Street Gym was very much a fighter's gym. Obviously, so many classic names gone through the gym, most notably Ali and Angelo Dundee, obviously, and his brother. And that's something I was really curious about hearing more from you is hearing more about Angelo Dundee's brother, Chris, who was really instrumental in promoting fights in Miami, right? And getting the fight scene going.
Yeah, he promoted the fight when he beat Liston. You know, it's like 12 blocks from here at the convention center. I think the convention center has been remodeled now, knocked down, but just like the old gym, they knocked down before people start like really saving things and really, you know, paying attention to old fashioned stuff. They knocked down the original Fifth Street Gym building. When we opened up in the same address, but not in the same building because they tore it down. But Chris Dundee was much older than Angelo, and he kind of hired his younger brother. He barely knew the guy. He moved out of the house long before Angelo really grew up. So he hired him for a few dollars a week, and Angelo was living in the gym. The great Angelo Dundee that eventually went on to make a lot of money was really started with very, very humble beginnings.
And he didn't really train any fighters, right, until he was actually in Miami, right? He started out really just kind of observing and being more of like a bucket guy, and then...
Well, that's how he started in New York as a bucket guy, and he just... But a bucket guy that was in the corner
for some
every week, Thursday night, Friday night, and Saturday night. You know, right. Now I volunteer to work cuts at the bare knuckle fights.
Yeah.
I volunteer to work cuts and rep hands at MMA fights. I try to get in every corner, any corner I can. My wife and daughter makes them crazy that I'm going for, you know, a few dollars. But every time you're in a fight, there's something to be learned from it. You know, whether it be just the way a guy wants his hands wrapped, you know, he might tell you, I want more pad here or more or less there, and he'll have a reason for it, and you'll pick something up from that, which will make you more prepared for your fighters.
The hand wraps within the bare knuckle, obviously the bare knuckle scene is kind of booming right now, and it's, you know, there's
what a sport.
A lot of ex UFC guys and boxers, of course, Pauly Malignaggi more recently. But how do they wrap? Is there a specific?
They wrap only the back of the hand, where in boxing, where you're allowed to put the tape,
right,
is where you're allowed to put the tape. Where the gauze would go, the pad on the front of the knuckles is non-existent. So it just goes. If you can see me, can you see me?
Yep.
Yeah. The tape goes up to here, so like 2 inches below the knuckles is where the tape just to support the back of the hand. And it's straight bare on skin, bone on bone.
Yeah.
And there's very little bad judging because either people get stopped for a cut or people get stopped, knocked out. And there's no grappling, which I'm a big fan of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu itself as a sport itself. But when I'm watching MMA, it can tend to be boring when two guys are only grappling. So I find that a lot of my clients and students and even the fighters, the boxers that are traditionalists will watch bare knuckle boxing because they know someone's going to get cracked.
Yeah. I mean, it's unavoidable, and it's really, you know, it's a smaller ring. Also, like with the guard, when guys have their hands up, you know, it's not gloves. You're not going to be able to deflect a lot of shots there. But it's interesting to hear about the actual wraps themselves. Like I've watched some of the fights, and you would just expect there to be more eye pokes. You know, that's a big issue within MMA.
Yeah, I mean they really are wasting their time with their hands open because you're going to get disqualified, and that could have been a good shot. With the bare knuckle, it doesn't have to be a great shot, it'll still be a good shot because it's bone on bone, skin on skin. Luis Palomino Baboon is my fighter. He won the bare knuckle FC fighting championship at 155 pounds. We were in Mississippi. It was supposed to be in Florida, where he sells a ton of tickets, and they couldn't get it approved for audience. But yet they had 50% audience there, and it was a great experience. It was awesome. We won the fight in 45 seconds. It was great.
Have you had to deal with any cuts?
Yeah, not with Baboon, no, thank God. But as just a cut man for a different organization, I worked just the blue corner, and the blue corner were the guys that were flown in they were not the A side. They were definitely the B side. They might have been the C side. That's how bad the blue corner was that night. And they put me to work. It was great. It was great experience. You know, again, all the more experience for me for my boxers.
And based on, I mean, it seems like common sense, right? But within the bare knuckle, I mean, the cuts just are much more common and probably worse, right, than anything else.
you know, there's a lot of them. In the, right. in the time that it was a lot of them, instead of a guy coming to corner with one, he's got three. And you're working simultaneously on three at the same time, which is super challenging. And it just going to make me a better cornerman.
Yep. And so you're obviously have a diverse background within boxing, corners, bare knuckle, MMA. But you're also, a martial artist yourself and, a black belt in Shaolin Kung Fu, right? Correct. And also,
we had a kind of a unique, we did San Chao, Chinese kickboxing. And I had a really strange instructor that would take us to judo tournaments and get us dropped on our head. And then that following Monday, he'd bring a judo coach in and be like, okay, now you could have brought this guy in last week. He's like, yeah, but you don't respect it like you do now. So now you respect it. Now you'll learn with an open mind. Like, yeah, an open mind and a bad back.
And did you start out in martial arts or boxing?
I did. As a 5-year-old child, I went to the Kung Fu school, and that's how it started. But he did the same thing. He took us to the to amateur boxing tournaments. Clueless, no idea what we were doing. And then he brought a boxing coach in from the local park district and had us go there twice a week to work on our hands. And that's how that whole thing evolved. And I had a fighter named Carl Davis Jr. that was ranked as a cruiserweight. He wanted to learn Kung Fu. He played professional football in Canada. He broke his ankle. He wanted to learn Kung Fu to get his ankle back so he could play football again. And one thing led to another, and he had knockout power. And I said, as a kickboxer in the 90s, you're not going to make any money. We switched from the boxing. He won the Chicago Golden Gloves a couple times with many knockouts. He turned pro. He never threw a punch when I met him at 26 years old. And he had a reasonable pro career. And it gave me my start, really, training and coaching professional fighters.
Okay. So, yeah, that's what I was curious about with, the background in Chicago. And, I was reading a little bit about your time with, Andre Arlovski as well with UFC.
And yeah, that was a great experience. He would come by us my partner, his name was Dino, was actually his original jiu-jitsu coach. And that guy was a great coach and really got him situated. But when we worked on his hands with him, he brought in other coaches. They had a management team that was from Russia, and they were all about bringing somebody else in. There was a lot of cooks to spoil the soup. But Andre kept his head and kept his focus and, became the world champion. He got knocked out his first MMA fight. The kid, right. He really doesn't have a chin per se. No. He's a tough guy that's not afraid of anything. And a lot of guys get knocked out and it messes them up psychologically. Andre does not care. He comes back, better and stronger than ever. At some point you get to be too old, obviously, but it's not because he's afraid of anything. That guy is a tough guy inside and out.
Yeah. I mean, he was one of my favorite guys, watching, especially in his younger days. And, when you were training with him, he was obviously very young. Cause I mean, I think he was the youngest heavyweight UFC champion ever.
Yes.
I think, I can't remember exact age, but I would say 23, something like that. I mean,
yeah. I think when he won the title, it was 23. Yeah.
So when you had him, I mean, he must have been pretty green, right? I mean, I don't know what his background was in terms of mixed martial arts or...
He had some kind of Samba background, basically. He did a little bit of MMA in Russia. I told you guys, his first, or Belarus, he got his first fight, he got knocked cold. He was just big and strong and athletic. Him and Carl Davis used to spar all the time. And it was at his disadvantage, obviously. Carl was both only boxing. So while he was spending... 66% of his time not boxing, Carl was only boxing, and Carl had big power. So it was very, he also sparred a lot with Fresno Kendo. So he was sparring with really high level boxers, and that really was the secret to the success. It wasn't some special mitt drill or all that nonsense. He was sparring with high level boxers. So it gave him the opportunity to be successful with his hands in MMA.
Yeah. I mean, he had a great career, obviously still going.
He was just at the gym a couple of days ago, and I just missed him. Yeah, so I guess I train a wrestler. His name is Dimitri, and Dimitri is really close friends with the camp from Khabib, and for some reason we're all going on a private jet on Wednesday. I don't know where we're going. I don't know what we're doing, but me and Andre and Dimitri and Khabib's manager are all going on a private jet. And I don't know what's going to happen, but hopefully I come back.
No way. Is it his manager? Was it Abdel, I can't pronounce his name, but.
Yeah, not the one you see in everything. I guess his business partner.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Very cool. I wonder where you guys are headed. I mean, Khabib is obviously training for a big fight against Justin Gaethje. Yeah.
And I guess they manage both sides. They manage A and B.
Yeah, they do. They do.
So they're very excited because it's a win-win.
Yeah, all the money's in the same pot.
There you go.
But yeah, so that's great to hear about like your time in Chicago, and then obviously that eventually led you back to Miami and the Fifth Street Gym. And, you know, you're training a bunch of fighters there currently. And there's a guy that I'm curious to hear more about. And that's Scardina from Italy, the Italian fighter who's undefeated.
Daniele, he came here on a vacation once. And he was just fresh out of the World Series of Boxing. And he asked me if I would hold pads for him. And I said, no, I really only have time for my clients and for professionals. He said, I want to turn professional. I said, when you're ready, you come see me. He came a year later, ready to move to Miami and commit to being a professional boxer. I got a sponsor to sponsor him and pay for his basic necessities. He lives a few blocks from the gym, and nobody that I've ever seen in my life works harder than this guy. This guy never misses a workout, never takes a round off. It's unbelievable. He sparred with James DeGale and he sparred with many, many world champions. And if they want to go 11 rounds, he wants to go 12. He just, as a psychological thing, he's like, ask me if I can go one more. And they're like, we scheduled 10. That's enough. Like, well, you're crazy, kid. He is determined. And right now he's on Dancing with the Stars in Italy. Yeah, he's very, very popular. His social media has grown beyond belief. And he's there doing Dancing with the Stars. It's in a little delay because he caught Corona. So they put him in a two-week – he had no symptoms, but they put him in a two-week hiatus from practicing with his dance partner. But he will finish that. If he does really well, he'll finish in November, be back here at the end of November for Thanksgiving, and then we'll train 2 months, and then he'll fight again in January.
And what do you think is next for him? I know at this time, right, he's 16-0, Daniel Scardina, for the people who want to check it out. But
yeah, he's actually 18-0. He's number 14, I think, in the IBF and the WBA. You know, everything is kind of in limbo right now with everything.
Yeah.
He's, you know, with being the top 15, he's qualified to fight for a world title. That being said, we would jump at the opportunity. If somebody out there, if one of the champs thinks they can beat him, they better come in shape. They better come committed. They better not underestimate him because he takes every minute of every round very seriously. He'll come very prepared. So he's limited on experience. He's got 18 professional fights. And he doesn't have a lot of amateur fights at all. So he's got not a lot of experience, but in the gym, he's been with everybody. He's been with every champ he can get his hands on, and he's ready and waiting.
Is he a natural 168, or is he? Could he go down to 160 as well? I'm just kind of
curious. He's a natural 200 pounder that busts his ass with diet and exercise to fight it. And then when he actually steps in the ring, he's about 179.
Okay.
So he makes weight at 168. With the IBF, you got to make, they only allow you 10 pounds the next day. You know, that's like in the morning, he's like exactly 178. And then he has lunch, so maybe he's 180. But he's a big guy. He's over 6 feet tall. He's a big, big guy.
Yeah, because there's obviously, you know, as you know, there's a lot of really quality guys from 160 to 168, which is good, right? I mean, there's a lot of options for him in the future, and a lot of really good matchups.
Yes. I mean, he's got a something about him, a certain star quality that the Zone really loved him. I know the Zone is now, I guess they're not in boxing anymore, I guess, but yeah. He just got to do his job, stay in shape, stay healthy. You know, there's so many fighters life gets sidetracks them. And I don't think life will sidetrack him. I think if they're going to have to beat him, they have to beat him fair and square in the ring.
Well, that's awesome. Everyone listening, make sure to go check him out on Instagram and follow his career. I think he's going to be definitely making some big splashes soon.
Not to mention, he's got the prettiest girlfriends that anyone's ever seen. So as it goes.
I went on his Instagram and I said, man, this guy, he's got a good life right now.
Yeah, if you look back at his old ones, he's got different girls as he goes along. So it's very interesting.
Yeah, so that's awesome. Everyone go check him out. But also, you know, it'd be remiss if I didn't mention or talk about, obviously your time with Angelo Dundee and Muhammad Ali, and you know, I'd love to just hear some stories about those guys, and obviously just to be able to know such an icon, Ali, you know, it's just like, that's crazy to even, you know, that you had a personal relationship with him.
Yeah, it is crazy. My friend Tom, who started the gym with me, who was Fresno Kendall's manager, was really like Muhammad's best friend the last like 4 or 5 years that he was with us. His sister-in-law was like his caretaker, and the three musketeers the last few years. They were together all the time, and when Muhammad takes his medicine to be in public to shake less, it tightens up his throat as well, and he can't speak. But when he's home, shaking a lot, but also talking a lot, we got great stories and great fun and autographs and pictures. He drew pictures for us, and a great time. I was having lunch with him once. It was just me, him, and his sister-in-law, and we were having lunch, and I read a tweet that said, Lennox Lewis is coming to retirement to fight Klitschko for $100 million. And without skipping a beat, Muhammad said, for $100 million, I'll fight both of them.
I'm sure he meant it, too.
Yeah, I'm sure he did. He was the best, man. He really was. We watched cowboy movies at his house for hours on end, like three in a row. He's great. He clearly flirted with girls a third of his age until the very end. Until the very end. He clearly was hitting on chicks. It was just, and he meant it. And they were enamored by him. They were like staring into his eyes. I mean, he had it going on until the last minute.
Yeah, I mean, like, just looking back at old videos of him, like in the Fifth Street gym before the Sonny Liston matchup, and there's just so many iconic moments, and like, he was such a special person, regardless of how he was as a fighter. It was like his gift of gab was just unmatched. I mean, we haven't seen anything like that before. So it's great to hear that he was like that even, you know, in his last years. And you know, when he was talking to you guys, like, I guess when he was at home, did he ever talk about boxing per se, like today? Like, was he a fan still, or was he?
Yeah, for sure. Because we would ask him, or we would put the fights on, we'd watch the fights with him. So we'd put them on, and, you know, and he would, you know, play around and move his head around, and, you know, and yeah, you know, we weren't, you know, analyzing. We're just, you know, it's hard because you're so happy to just be sitting in the room with the guy. You don't want to ruin it for him.
Right.
You know, you're thinking to yourself, like, of course you want to know, like, what does he think? But you don't want to interview him. And, you know, want to just enjoy the fights. He watched all sporting events, for that matter, though. He was into sports in general. He really supported the University of Louisville. The Redbirds, he watched their football team every chance he got. He's a very well-rounded guy. He did a lot of stuff and had friends. You know, he just had friends everywhere. And when you're at his house, celebrities would just pop in, knock on the door. He'd be like, oh, my God, I can't believe I'm sitting in the kitchen with these two guys. It was unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, he's a crazy icon. So I'd imagine, yeah, if I was in your shoes, I probably wouldn't want to say anything, too. I'd just be happy that I'm there.
Yeah, I don't want to get kicked out, so I kept my mouth shut.
But his daughter as well, like more recently, obviously she had a good or great career, but you know, she was mentioning potentially a comeback versus Clarissa Shields, and do you think there's any legitimacy to that, or her coming back, or not really?
I wouldn't if I were her. Not that she can't not necessarily win, because women, I feel, that are really much stronger later. I think their physical potential is reached a little later, so it's not like she's not 100, you know. So I don't think that's, but I just don't think getting punched in your face for anything other than the necessity is really good. Unless you just can't live without it, you really shouldn't. You shouldn't do it. You know, I have guys in here all the time, and they're like, I'm going to college, and I'm coming here, and I'm, you know, in the middle of my med school. I'm like, what are you doing? Like, you know, and I don't mean financially. I mean, if they just have a need, if you really need to do it, then you should do it. And you should do it all the way until the end, until they drag you out of the ring. So you're not 50 years old, regardless of the size of your house, or the size of your car or the size of your bank account, not wishing you woulda, shoulda, coulda. That's not the point. But if you don't have that feeling, you really shouldn't, in my opinion.
Yeah. And that's a lot of the conversation, right, around Tyson and everything going on with him. It's like, he recently was on Joe Rogan's podcast and he looks phenomenal. He has a crazy mindset again, talking like how he said he's like sexually aroused thinking about fighting. He's like, is that normal? I'm like, Joe's like, no, I don't think so. but like, that just speaks to his mindset. I mean, he's like full on savage, ready to go. He looks phenomenal. And it's like, it's a weird situation because these are older guys. You don't want to see anyone get really hurt, but you see Tyson move around and that's not your average 53-year-old or whatever it is. Like, I don't know. Maybe something is possible for him to do, pull off.
It is, but I don't know what, like, if he beats Roy Jones Jr., people say he should have beat Roy Jones Jr.
Right.
If he loses to Roy Jones Jr., people are really going to criticize that he did it. You know, unless he were to fight someone that was like a contender, I don't know the point. For me, you know, we all have such people have memories of Mike being actually better than he was. I mean, when it came down to it, we fought the really top fighters for whatever reason, because he had a bad wife or a bad life or was on drugs, like he says, he lost. He lost to Lewis. He lost to Holyfield. I mean, you know, in order to be considered great, you got to beat the great ones, even if it's at the end of their careers. And he didn't. So, but people of my age, between like, I'm 49, I was in high school when he was the world champ, and people that are a little bit younger and just a little bit older, they have such great memories of him. I have a dozen kids that come to the gym from all over the world with Mike Tyson tattooed on them. Daniele's got Mike Tyson tattooed on him. But he doesn't even, and I said, how could you tattoo a guy that lost to Lennox Lewis and Holyfield? I, you know, of course I gave him a hard time. I was like, you should have those guys. They won. They're like, oh, he's not like Mike. You know, so people, I don't think the ones out there that look at him like that should see him any more than the way they remember him.
Yeah. No, that's interesting. I mean, I don't know if you ever saw the comments Teddy Atlas had about Tyson's career, but it was pretty interesting what he said, and he was kind of comparing him to Ali in the sense that when Tyson really he was like, look, Tyson's really been in five fights, and his point was that in the moments where he had some pushback or he wasn't just steamrolling guys, that's when he ran into issues, and that's when, you know, he ran into, you know, the real deal Holyfield, and he wasn't the guy he thought he was. That's what Teddy Atlas's take was, but it was interesting to hear him say that. And then obviously on the other side with Ali, people love him for so many reasons, but also when he lost, he came back and got the win back. And it was like that comeback of like, just that never quit, never die spirit and overcoming is kind of what separates them in terms of,
you know, at the very end with Muhammad, we went out and the last time I spent time with him, and we walked and he kind of used my hand like a cane, and it was really difficult for him to walk, and he just squeezed my hand and made it happen. And to see something, you could see that was the guy that was in the Rumble of the Jungle with George Foreman all up on him, on the ropes. And he was just never going to, you could just, I'm getting goosebumps thinking about it. He was never going to give up. You know, it's unbelievable. I'm getting choked up thinking about it.
Yeah. I mean, when you watch those old fights, it's like, I like watching those back from time to time. Cause it's just like, is this real? Is he really taking this much damage? Like he's taking everything these guys got for 15 rounds, even like in the thrill of
gloves. Those gloves are terrible.
Yeah, the gloves look like they're
terrible. They look like they bought them at Walgreens, like from a kid's, like, you know, like they're filled with horsehair. When horsehair gets wet, it is dangerous. It is unbelievable. It's what they went through, you know, with him and Frazier and him and Foreman. Wow.
Yeah, it's just we hope as boxing fans that we can get some of that magic back. It'll never be like Ali, but you know, it's good that recently in the heavyweight division, you know, we got Wilder and Fury, their first matchup. You got to give both those guys like all the credit in the world.
I love it.
It was
love
just it. An iconic moment that was made with Fury getting up off the deck. Just like an iconic round. And then obviously Fury kind of steamrolled him, was surprisingly, at least on my end, I was shocked by that, in the second fight, and they got the trilogy coming up.
Yeah. Fury is unbelievable. I mean, he's great. I mean, obviously there's only one Ali, but that being said, this guy is great on the microphone, great in an interview, great at the press conference, great in the ring, and has the ability to come back when the chips are down. That's pretty, you know, that those are a lot of great attributes for a fighter. And he's really technical. He does a lot of good things. I really, as the heavyweight division goes, boxing goes. So it's good for all of us involved as fans, as the profession. I have a heavyweight named Christian Toon, who's 6'9", 269 pounds. He's 5-0. And, you know, we really study the Gypsy King. We study him. There's a lot to learn from him.
Yeah.
And it's great. And there's no secret about it. You know, you see that you can see him spar if you want to. You can watch the fights. He's very open about what he does. There's no secret punch he's working on. He's just out there doing what he's doing. He's moving his feet, he's moving his head, he's jabbing a lot. He's doing the basics of boxing really good. A lot of fakes. He does some really good things. He does them so good that you go, Deontay Wilder can watch that tape all he wants, and he's, I don't think he can do anything about it.
Yeah. Well, the one thing a lot of people say about Fury, I'd be curious your opinion, is, you know, that he's very unorthodox and he does things differently, like similar to Ali in that sense. And I don't know if it was Dundee who said it, but it was like he does everything wrong right or something like that. There's some quote like that. And it's,
Angelo was telling me that when he would spar, Muhammad would spar, if you told him to do something, he would not do it. It had to be his idea. So he would come to the corner after not jabbing, for example, and Andrew would say, "Wow, champ, your jab looks so good today." And then the next round, then Muhammad would get on the jab. But if you told him, start jabbing, you didn't jab the whole round, he would go out of his way not to throw any jabs the next round.
And he never went to the body, which I thought was like the...
I didn't believe them when they told me that. Andrew was telling me that, and I just... I had to go watch the fights again, and he really didn't. He would flick his jab once in a while a little low, but that really is the extent of it.
I know, and it's like, imagine being like, I'm not going to go to the body against Joe Frazier, a guy who's just
running you over,
coming at you for, and like the heat of that fight, the thrill of Manila, like that was 110 degrees or something in the ring because of the lights too, pumping down on him. It was outside. It's like.
And that was before they measured the humidity. Like now when it's in Miami, when it's 90 here, it says it's that my phone says it's 90, but it feels like 102. It was 110 legit in the ring with the humidity of the Philippines. Like, who knows what it would have been felt like, not to mention their boxing and Joe Frazier trying to kill you. I can't even imagine. You know, another thing interesting, Angelo Dundee, when we first opened the gym was not even built yet. We had like two folding chairs in my midst. That's all we had. And I have an MMA fighter named Lazar Stojadinovic, who really has good hands, and he's been with me for a long time. So we got our mitts down, you know, pat, where we got it all memorized, basically. And I was doing mitts, and Angelo goes, "What?" Angelo was very sweet all the time when he talked, but out of the blue, he's like, "What the F are you doing?" I was like, "I'm holding mitts." He's like, "Don't ever hold mitts." I'm like, "What do you mean, don't ever hold mitts?" He's like, "When Michael Jordan plays basketball, does the net come get the ball?" He's like, "Absolutely not." He's like, "The ball has to go get in the net." He goes, face is never going to jump out and hit someone's hand. Your hand's got to go get the face. He said, "Put him on the heavy bag. If he can't hit the heavy bag, he shouldn't be here." And it was fascinating. And then we were with Emmanuel Stewart, Miguel Cotto, and Angelo. And they brought in Angelo like as a consultant. And Angelo, you know, brought his little, you know, me, the puppy along, to just so excited to be there. And he did a little filming of Manuel holding mitts for Cotto. And as soon as the thing was over, he took the mitts off and threw them on the floor. He's like, "This is not doing that. Go hit the bag." Like they were vehemently against it.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think Floyd made it popular. You know, I've talked about that before, but a lot of the fancy mitt work with him and Roger and people just like thought that was cool.
Yeah, absolutely. Now I have bad shoulders because of Floyd. Thank you very much.
Yeah, man, that's awesome to hear from that. And I'm sure Ali also, you know, he continued to train at Fifth Street, right, in Miami pretty throughout his career.
Well, he had a camp house that he made in Pennsylvania. So he did that, but he always came back. And when we reopened the gym, like, he was so enthusiastic about it. I'm sorry?
Go on those long runs, right, with the...
Yeah, over the bridge. It's a long way from Overtown, which was the traditional African-American neighborhood, that all the way to Miami Beach, where the first time the cops harassed him, like, where are you going? He's like, I'm going to Fifth Street Gym. I'm with Angelo. And they're like, oh, you're with Angelo. Go ahead. And there's the Raven. Have you ever heard of the Raven? The Raven is a guy that's been running every day from Fifth and the ocean on the beach, on the sand, every day for the last, I think, 50 years with pneumonia, hurricanes. And the way he started was running with the fighters from Fifth Street.
No way.
But yeah, they did an ESPN special on him, ESPN like 30 by 30. He's never missed a day. His back is all bent up. He's an old man now. He never misses it. Now he's down to a walk, but he walks like, it's like, and people come from all over the world to run with him. It's the craziest thing.
Did Ali run with him?
Absolutely. Ali ran with him, yeah.
Oh my gosh. So that's why Ali was able to withstand that heat probably in the Philippines, right? He's running in Florida.
Yeah, he really got his miles in under, and he would run wearing sweatpants, sweatshirts, and combat boots.
Keep his weight down too, because at times he seemed like that was an issue for him, right, later in his career.
But at the end he had some screwball doctor that told him that he had a thyroid condition. And he probably didn't. They gave him thyroid medicine. And I think that's when things really went south.
Yeah.
I think there was a big mistake there. I don't know, obviously. It was before my time. But from what Angelo told me and what everybody's, you know, talking about, that's what the impression that I have.
Well, I appreciate, you know, you taking some time to talk boxing. But before I let you go, you know, I'd love for you to sort of touch on maybe your top three, top five guys you got in the gym right now. I know you've worked with a lot of celebrities and things like that, but I'm more talking about, you know, fighters. Obviously we talked about Scardina and, maybe some other guys you'd like to highlight that.
I have two more guys. I have that heavyweight that we're very excited about. He's a great guy, trains really hard. It's, you know, it's hard when Scardina's in the gym with you. It's hard to take a day off, because I will bust your balls and tell you how Scardina doesn't miss. How could you miss? So there's Christian Toon, a 5-0 heavyweight. There's Nikolai. Nikolai is a Kazakhstan kid that fights at 135 pounds. And, of course, he's undefeated right now. He's back in Kazakhstan. He was here for a year. We're working with him. We're very excited about him. There's another kid named Aronim that's from Romania. So they're all over my Instagram, these guys. They're all undefeated right now. They're very new, though. They're just getting their feet wet. But these pros from all the world come here, and they're getting in with them all the time, and it's been great. We have a cruiserweight that's 24-2 named Noel Gever that fought for the world title. It was ESPN had it. Dan Rafael had it. The robbery of the year. And he is a cruiserweight that's number 9 in the WBA right now, and hopefully we'll get another title shot. So these guys, we're very excited about all these guys.
Great. So everyone, you know, go check out Dino's Instagram page. Obviously for all of his content, Good Morning South Beach, you got to love that. And then, you know, he's posted about some of his fighters in and out of the gym. So make sure to catch up on that, follow him. And then also good luck to you, Dino, as you're flying out to an unknown location. Hope you enjoy that trip. And yeah, I look forward to maybe hearing about what that entails.
Well, I'm always here for you. So I'm ready whenever you guys are. I will see you at the fights. Hopefully the world title fights. Hopefully let audience in. We can enjoy this again.
Awesome. So everyone go check this episode out. It's going to drop on YouTube at the Pod Matrix. Make sure to hit subscribe, hit that bell to get the alerts for the videos coming out. Follow me on Instagram, Brooklyn Boxing Podcast. Follow Dino. And look for this to drop soon. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much.